to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
All right, good evening, everybody. Welcome to Industry Night with Foodie and the Beast, David and Nikki Nellis. This is the show where we do deep dives into fascinating subjects. And tonight's subject, we're going to do a deep dive into a guy named Mikey Freeman.
We're not going into him.
Well,
we're going to talk about him, with him.
We could.
There's enough cocktails.
It's radio. It's theater of the mind.
Okay.
So Mikey is a New Jersey native who burst on the scene here in Washington. He's the chef owner of a couple of wonderful restaurants. One is Red Hen, which is highly regarded by everybody, including Tom Sietema of the Washington Post.
Mm-hmm.
And there are now two all-purpose restaurants. All-purpose is, what do we call it, a pizzeria on steroids?
I think that's a good way to put it.
That's
yeah,
a good
think.
Way. That is also highly regarded and beloved by everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And full disclosure, our son Sam is actually Mikey's GM at, where is he, at Red Hen?
AGM. He's an AGM.
He's AGM.
He's
yeah,
not a full GM.
Yeah, and I would
don't
him,
give him a raise just
no,
yet.
No, 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 yeah, no, no. When he leaves here,
you don't
want to
stroke his ego too much.
But, and so we wanted Mikey
yeah,
to come in.
He doesn't need any help.
We okay. wanted Mikey to come in, not just to talk about how wonderful his restaurants are, but he has found an amazing fusion between, you know, he's a New Jersey native, between New Jersey Italian cuisine and Jewish cuisine. And the nexus of those two is just bloody delicious.
Mm-hmm.
I probably got 5 pounds on each hip because of you. So we're going to talk about all
you're
that.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Why don't
like,
we start
you're welcome.
With,
well, I'd like to start...
At
the very start.
You were born in a log cabin.
No, but talk about your upbringing a little bit.
Sure.
And how you became interested in food and, you know, becoming a chef. Like, what led you down that road?
Yeah, it was... It was a road that I never thought I would go down.
Mm-hmm.
I
like when
in,
you say that, do you mean like when you were 20, you never thought you'd go down there, or when you were young?
No, so I started working at 14.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was getting paid under the table at an Italian deli in Jersey, and I loved it. I was making good money. It was a restaurant, or sorry, it was a deli that was definitely protected by the mafia.
Okay.
So there was a lot of like interesting things I saw, definitely... The first place I ever smoked a cigarette.
Okay.
Definitely smoked a...
oh, that sounds like the mafia.
Virginia Ooh. Slim. I was mm-hmm. I was drinking Goldschlager out of a wooden walk-in. No, but I mean, every week, a guy would come up in a limo
uh-huh.
with a really
with a bag of money.
Beautiful suit. No, he'd have a bag,
mm-hmm.
and he'd drop it off, and then I would hand him a whole box of subs and chips and sandwich and drinks and everything
Thank
like
you.
That. It was wild. But
that's quite a entryway.
It was awesome. Yeah.
I mean,
it
I would
awesome.
Be like, this is pretty fabulous.
It was awesome.
You know, we're going to have to stop and do a commercial here because we've just been joined by world famous, globally, galactically famous Todd Thrasher.
The best.
Mixologist to the stars, the proprietor of Potomac Distilling Company at the New Wharf in D.C.
Opening November 7th-ish.
Yes, soon.
Hopefully,
and, so exciting.
He loves Mikey, so he came in to
oh,
toast
Oh, I love
Mikey.
Him. He's a great guy.
He came in to toast us with...
I've been drinking Todd's drinks for many, many, many moons.
I can tell.
Yeah.
So tell us.
Be nice, David. So as the spirited advisor here mm-hmm. for you and brothers and sisters of Line Hotel, I just changed the cocktail menu last week here. So this is called the Reboot. It is rum. Do you know why it's rum?
Because
I
you
do.
Like rum.
I like
I
rum.
Is it
and
called
I'm opening
Thrasher?
A rum distillery.
Wait,
no.
Is it Thrasher's
Not yet.
Rum?
Soon. Aww. Soon it will be Thrasher's Ooh. Rum.
Okay.
It's El Dorado 5-year rum from Guyana. It is jasmine tea. Mm. And then I kind of made honeysuckle. I couldn't buy honeysuckle extract because it's like $1,000 for a little eyedropperful. So I
why
kind of fudged
so cheap,
it.
Why are you so cheap,
Todd? Okay, so wait, what is honeysuckle?
I learned it from watching you.
You learned from the best.
So I stepped into that, didn't I?
I took honey, water, and orange flower water and combined them to kind of get that smell of honeysuckle. So it's a rum, honeysuckle, and jasmine tea. It's called
beautiful.
The Reboot.
That is so awesome.
But you know what I want to say about this is that I think if somebody reads honey or honeysuckle, they're going to assume that the drink is sweet.
Yeah.
But this is a very well-balanced cocktail that doesn't have that sweet sticky punch.
It's not
sweet
or sticky.
And
no.
I don't want to get romantic on
go
the
ahead,
stream.
Go ahead.
Like,
no,
it makes me
it.
Feel.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
It makes me
he just
feel.
Just put his hand on my thigh. So
oh, shoot. That's yours? No, it makes me feel like I'm like I should be in Morocco in like a Riyadh. Yeah. Watching the sunset, like it has that like
don't go to
Middle
embassy,
Eastern
though.
Flavor profile yeah. from that orange water and the jasmine. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah. it's amazing.
I took over the. I started doing all the cocktails are spoken English now too, because everyone would come in and say, "Do you do the cocktails spoken English?" I'm like, "No." So I started doing. So I, when I was doing this cocktail, I just started doing a lot of tea cocktails. So I put two tea cocktails back there, and this was one of them I was going to put back there, but I never put it on this menu.
Well, we
there.
Should tell people that spoken English is one of the Eric Bruner Yang's restaurants here at the fabulous Line Hotel, where our studio sits in the lobby.
Right.
So that spoken English is...
And it is a standing restaurant. You go in and you stand, and it's only for
20 people.
20 spots.
Yep. Awesome.
But you can make reservations.
And it's open Tuesday through Saturday.
Everybody who comes in gets a pair of Dr. Scholl's. So stand around.
That's so stupid.
All right, I got to go back
to
work.
They are delicious.
Fun,
thank you, Todd. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Shout
Todd,
out to
come
Potomac
again soon.
Distilling.
All right, so
delicious.
Back to you and your...
Back to my mafia days.
Your mafia days.
Okay, so here you are. You're slinging slubs.
Wait,
so
where is this exactly?
So this is in Westfield, New Jersey, the town I grew up in. I could actually walk to Duke's from home. Sometimes my mom would pick me up, but I had to sit in the back seat because I stunk of onions.
Okay.
So
yeah, I would fast food
that
myself.
That was definitely part of the deal. But, you know, the deli changed owners and... I think when I was about 17, my senior year of high school, and I
what,
quit.
Did the previous owner sleep with the fishes, or he just...
I don't know. I think he got out before things got weird. but I went to
but that's
college.
That's all speculation.
Hey, Santino.
Yeah. They haven't. They retired that case many years ago. When I left for college, I said to myself I would never go back into the restaurant industry.
Wow.
It was something that I felt that
was
I'd
it the
done.
Onion thing, or...
I think that it just... The new ownership, it kind of left a bad taste in my mouth. Mm-hmm. They didn't really treat me well.
Huh.
And so it was, you know, I was 17.
Was it like in Goodfellas? Did they shoot at your feet? And all
no,
that?
I wish.
Oh, okay.
That would have been better.
No.
Yeah,
well, at least it
would have
been
a better
story.
Exactly. So I went to college. I worked all throughout college. I did some catering gigs. I worked in the summers at a camp.
But you found yourself back
ends.
In food, like
so,
ish?
So, yeah. So, after college, I graduated with a communication degree from Boston University.
Mm-hmm.
And I landed a gig selling airtime for news radio.
Okay.
And I absolutely hated it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't for me. The cubicle gig wasn't for me. I felt like it was a lot of backstabbing going on, a lot of just...
Why do you look at me
shifty
when you say
stuff?
It's sales. It's all sales. It's not easy.
It's not easy, and it wasn't easy. And
I mean, not that you're not in, even though you're a chef and a restaurateur, you're still in sales.
No doubt about
but it's
it.
Very different,
right? And in that way, that experience helped me in what I would soon start to do. But I ended up moving out of Boston, going down to DC where my parents had moved a couple years ago, and was really stressed out. And I look back and I wasn't that stressed out as a 22-year-old, but I would stay in the guest room of my parents' apartment, and my mom had all these cookbooks there. And I started reading the cookbooks, and they calmed me down. I enjoyed the pictures. I enjoyed the recipes. And I said to myself, I was like, I'm 22. I'll at least try it out. And if I fail or if it's not for me, I can check it off the list.
Right.
And through a family friend, I got a gig at a French restaurant, cutting vegetables, making compound butters.
Which French restaurant?
Mon Ami Gabi.
Oh.
In Bethesda.
In Bethesda.
Yeah. And I worked there. They gave me a chainmail glove when I started. The guy that sat me down was like, hey,
you're gonna be doing
this
a lot
is
of
my
chopping.
Reputation on the line.
Mm-hmm.
Don't cut yourself. Don't embarrass me. Here's a chainmail glove. And
that's funny.
I enjoyed.
I was just thinking, I got one at a kitchen I was working in, and the first thing I did was try and cut myself.
Of course.
Through the chainmail.
That's what we all do. This thing doesn't work.
Let me see if I can cut off my.
That's
And I mean, from that first day, I loved it. I love the team mentality of restaurants. I think that's the biggest thing that I enjoy about restaurants, even to this day still. And
I mean,
what,
you didn't start off in a slow-moving restaurant. I mean, Mon Ami Gabi, especially in Bethesda, what, 15 years ago?
Yeah, 16 years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, so,
the only
I mean,
thing
that,
at that corner.
I mean, that place, right. you know.
Cranked.
Cranked.
Yeah, like, we were
it's
doing.
Full.
And it was funny because
lunch
I.
Lunch and dinner.
Oh, yeah. And I started off as a prep cook, and I moved through sauce station, butchery, pastries, salads on the line. And then I got hired as a chef.
Wow.
Yeah, one of the chefs got fired for dubiously looking at pornography in the office and putting cigarettes out in the chocolate mousse during Thanksgiving. So, oddly, he got let
go. I
guess
I have to fire myself now. Oh, well.
But I was the next in line because I spoke Spanish and English.
Okay.
And I had a good head on my shoulders, I guess, and it worked out.
So, I mean, you really had an opportunity there because that's a Let Us Entertain You property.
Oh, they wanted me to stay.
I was going to say, because, you know, the people who stay in that system,
sure,
you know, they're a huge restaurant chain group, so
I would
speak.
Yeah, I would call them a group for
right?
sure. And they have a wonderful structure in the sense
of... And a training
of
program.
Huge, huge training program
right?
that's national.
Right.
And they do such a great job. I can't say enough good things about Let Us Entertain You. In the sense of the systems that they provide.
Mm-hmm. What
and
an amazing
the futures,
education for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, the futures
think
that they
it.
Provide. I mean, owners would come in and introduce themselves, and it was very grounded. Like, these guys were running 80, 90 restaurants from L.A. to New York, and mm-hmm. they would come in and ask you what your name was. And I always found that it left an impression on me
sure.
in terms of the hospitality that they ran from,
well,
it, from
you
day to day.
Because there are people in every industry, your industry and every other, that inhale their own fumes and suddenly their poop doesn't stink. And
I mean,
you know,
it does, but they just lost their sense of
that's
smell.
Sure.
That's right. But I mean, first guy I ever went to work for, it was, you know, it surprised me when he said it, but he said, you know, just remember the queen shits too. We're all
right.
just people.
Yeah.
And if you treat them right, they're going to do right by you.
And I mean,
I think my interest is that I think of other people that I know who were in Let Us Entertain You. And, you know, you could really climb a ladder there and go corporate and probably never cook again. Do you know what I mean?
Oh,
and,
for sure.
And live a very different lifestyle.
For sure.
So at what point were you like, next, what am I doing next?
There
How
is
do
a,
I build
a
on
very,
this?
Very clear point. The corporate chef came in and I was known as like the young kid, and she really beat me up from time to time whenever she would come in from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day she came in for a big menu change that they would do 4 times a year.
Mm-hmm.
And her name was Susan, a very talented, very well acclaimed, one of the first female Canadian executive chefs. I mean, like, unbelievable
mm-hmm.
Pedigree. And she said, hey, Mike, make me a burger. And I was like, okay, I'll make you a burger. No problem. I'm a chef. I know how to make a burger.
Right.
And I got behind the grill and I grilled the burger and I was like, what kind of burger you want? Because we had like 6 burgers on the menu. I can't remember what she said, but, you know, she was like, make sure it's medium rare.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay. And brought it out. And she goes, what temperature do you think this is? And I said, I think it's medium rare. And she said, are you sure? And she hadn't even looked at it yet.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, I'm sure. And she cut it open and it was raw.
Huh.
And she said to me, she goes, you need to go to culinary school.
Wow.
And that was that.
So where'd you go to school?
I went to Culinary Institute of America. Yeah,
Hyde Park?
Up in Hyde Park.
Such an yep. amazing place.
It was an amazing place. I was, as I'm sure you feel,
Did
I was the old man
you?
On the block. Huh?
Did Let Us Entertain You send
no,
you?
No, no, no. That was talked about. So there was a scholarship that was talked about because they wanted me to continue on in the company. I declined that. I don't think that we ever pursued it. I talked to Kevin Brown, who was one of the major CEOs of the company, and mm-hmm. he was great. And all the guys, I still keep in touch with a lot of the guys in Lettuce that I worked with. And that's also where I met Mike O'Malley, my business partner.
Sure.
He was the AGM.
Right.
At the Bethesda location.
And so, but now he didn't
There's
go
hope to, for Sam then.
Did Mike go to culinary school?
Exactly. No. So when I went, a month before I left
mm-hmm.
for CIA, Mike left for DePaul for an MBA.
Okay.
So
oh,
he was on the track to Chicago. I was on the track to New York.
Mm-hmm.
I went to
but
CIA.
Honestly, it's really interesting when you say that because you're both obviously, like, he goes to get his MBA. You're both honing your skills. You go to culinary
100%.
School, right? Like, you can see the trajectory.
Yes. And the thing was,
if this was a movie, this would be foreshadowing.
I know. And we would, yes, exactly.
But you would be a hot blonde.
I mean, not I could put a wig on it.
Not that you're not.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, his wife is the hot blonde.
That's true.
Is
she
blonde.
Is.
There's
she...
a hot blonde in the story. She's just not in the room.
Well, there's Amen. A hot blonde on the radio with us, too.
That is true.
Hubba okay. hubba.
Yeah, I mean, and we kept in touch the whole time. I mean, we were, you know, we left Lettuce in 06,
mm-hmm.
and we opened up Bread Hen in 2012, which is not actually a lot of time when
no,
you think
it's
about
not. But you went to a lot of kitchens in D.C. You still came back to D.C.
I still came back to D.C. So
you,
I was
wait,
at...
Where'd you go first, though?
So I was at CIA, and then I went to the Modern,
In New York. Right.
And I was there working for Danny Meyer, learning about systems, really learning about hospitality. All the stuff you read in his book actually happens.
Right.
It is. They live and breathe it, and rightfully so. I left.
And he happens to be, like, I'm sure he's hard to work for, but he happens to be a very congenial,
lovely. He's a genuinely good human
being. I've interviewed him a couple times, and he's just darling.
He's a genuinely good human being, and everybody in his company is. I hope they're listening, you know,
because
I need some reservations.
Right.
Go up to New York. So I came down to D.C., and before I left school, before I graduated, I'd landed a job with Jose Andres.
Okay.
So I had worked really hard to make sure that I had a position open. My dad
So
and
which
mom,
restaurant did you start at?
Oddly enough, I got hired for Zaytinya, but they didn't have a position for me.
Okay.
So I ended up right out of culinary school working in Jose Andres' house. On his television show.
I knew that.
Yes.
Right.
Very, very odd position for me to have.
Made in a spin.
Yes. Made in spin.
Made in spin. No, no, no.
Delicious.
You have to say spin.
Spin.
Spin. Spin. Spin in a spin.
See. He was great. You know, I got to hang out with his family. I got to learn about food styling.
Patricia's great.
She's wonderful.
Yeah, Peachy's great. His kids are, I mean, his kids, I knew them as not higher than my hip, and I think one of them's in college now. Two of them are in high school.
Makes
so
you feel old, son.
It does. I feel so old. But
I know, but I think, like, looking back on that, what a gift from the gods to be able to have that kind of one-on-one with him.
Oh,
especially
for sure.
Before, I mean, listen, he was already very popular then, don't get me wrong. I mean, he's stratospherically different now.
Yes.
But you know, he's so passionate and enthusiastic.
It's
and that's
true.
Real.
It's very, very real. And for me, I, you know, when I graduated, I did not want to work at Zaytinya. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to work at Cafe Atlantico.
Who was at Zaytinya then? Was that Mike?
So Mike had just been hired, but it was a fairly new restaurant.
Right.
It was just maybe a year old, maybe 18
months. Because he wasn't the opening
but
chef.
But Cafe Atlantico had been, you know.
Oh, right.
It had pedigree. It had mini bar in it.
Katsuya was there.
I thought that that's kind of where my line of work would go, is I would kind of graduate to mini bar and do all these cool gastronomic things. Jose Andres came to CIA and did a demo with Ruben, who I'm now very, very close with, which is kind of hilarious because I watched him cook and I was like, oh, my God, this is what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened to be in the same city where my parents lived, which was great.
Right.
Because I kind of had the ability to go anywhere I wanted as long as I could find either an apartment or a couch to sleep on. And that's I did both when I would stage later on in my career. But I think I did the show for about 8 weeks, maybe 10 weeks. And finally, they had a position open at Zaytinya and got a chance to hop in and learned all the stations. And, you know, talk about a beast. I mean, that restaurant was crazy.
That restaurant, honestly, is still crazy.
Yeah,
I mean it's real. What's really fascinating about Jose's restaurants, whether it's Haleo, Chinichocana, which is one of the newer concepts, or, you know, but the older restaurants, Zaytinya especially, they churn and burn. It's
Oyamel
fascinating.
Is a thousand
and Oyamel,
years old.
Yes, and Oyamel as well. Right. I mean, it's really fascinating. I mean,
so was Mike Isabella, the...
I was Mike's first, like, culinary-inspired hire.
Mm-hmm. So another New Jersey Jew. No, wait. He's...
No. Jersey Italian.
Yeah, he is Jersey Italian.
Really?
Jersey
no kidding.
Italian.
I had no idea.
Jersey, yeah.
But, I mean, there must have been some...
I think there was good connection there. I think that, you know, Mike and I were very tight for a really long time. And he was a phenomenal chef when we were working together. He was very inspiring. His, you know, work ethic was really, really strong. The way that he dealt with people was very real, really not demeaning at the time. I mean, he really could bring a group together, and he was a great leader at the time. I loved learning from him, loved learning from Jose. Throughout all of that, and kind of what I think really helped me in my career is that my dad was diagnosed with cancer when I first started at Zaytinya. So like 10 weeks living, I was living in Bethesda. And my dad got diagnosed with cancer.
Oh, my
goodness. And he ended up passing 6 weeks later. It was very, very quick.
Oof.
And for me, I really just dove into work. It was kind of my... I'd cry on the way to work. I'd work a 16-hour shift. And then I'd cry on the way home. And I'd do it all. I would do 7 days a week. I was their workhorse.
Wow.
And that, for me, helped me in some ways, hurt me in other ways.
Something to dive into.
For sure.
So.
And in time, I got to do offsite events. I was really tight with Jose in doing events in New York, events in California. We cooked Selma Hayek's wedding in Venice, Italy. And that was a really special experience to be a part of kind of his inner circle team.
And I
to
bet.
Think you and I were pals then. And
I know. I know.
So one, I'm going to interject with a Jose story. Cause I've known Jose since he got to D.C. because the Cafe Mid-Atlantico group was headed by David Abramson, who was my partner.
Oh, wow.
And that's how I met Jose. But he's known Nikki forever. And every time he runs into Nikki, he says, "When I can't do it. When are you having me to dinner at your house?" And she's like, "You want me to cook?"
He's always like, "When he's like, you haven't invited me to dinner." And I'm always like,
"That's
right.
Yeah, you can't live that far away. He's in Bethesda. You're in Kensington.
I haven't invited you to dinner." And he said, "Well, you should invite us over." And I said, "You're right. I will invite you over." And he says, "But you know, we're very busy." I'm like,
I think the cagey way to do it would be to have a volcano go off in the middle of our house, and then
sure
he'll come and bring
very,
the food
very
for
busy.
Us.
Sure. Anyway, it's very funny. Okay, so then you wound up at Proof?
I wound up, yeah, so I left Think Food Group just because I needed to cook again.
Sure.
I'd gotten kind of lost in the systems, lost in the nuances that I didn't want to get lost in, and I had...
But were you part of the opening of Proof, or did you join Heider later?
No, I was like, my first day was Estadio's first day.
Oh, okay.
Open. Oh my God.
Wow.
So about 2.5-3 years
ago. Madness.
Yeah.
It was craziness. And
that's
I worked,
really at the height of Proof.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I worked 28 days straight just trying to gain some
balance
and gain respect from the team.
That last booth in the back before the kitchen was our romance
booth. That table four. That was table four.
Hubba Hubba, baby.
Yeah. And then they extended them. Mm-hmm. Even more hubba hubba.
Well, they found out how tall I was.
It was a great restaurant. I learned what I never learned from any other chef. I learned from Heider in terms of cooking kind of off the cuff, right? Like
he's really talented,
Well, let's say it's Heider Karoum. He's now the chef owner of Chloe down on the Southeast Waterfront, and he's killing it down there.
He's crushing it. And he should be, you know, and his food is really on point. And something that I learned and had to kind of pull out from all the experiences as I got a little bit older and then opened up my own restaurants is that every restaurant, every chef, every owner I worked for, they were successful because of two things. They were high quality and they were consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all that matters. And also the absence of ego. Ego had nothing to do with it.
Right.
It was about getting people into your restaurant.
Let me just say, they all have egos.
Sure.
But that's not what you took away from them.
Yes.
Yeah, but they're not out of control. They're not, you know, well.
Okay. Right. That's all debatable.
On the next show.
On the next show, egos and chefs.
Yes. No, but I mean, I opened up Red Hen. You know, I worked at Proof for 3 years.
Right.
The only reason I left Proof is that I signed a deal for Red Hen.
Okay, but wait. When did you and Mike O'Malley reconnect?
So myself and Mike, we'd never disconnected. We'd always talked. We actually almost opened up a restaurant in Las Vegas off the Strip.
Okay.
Because he was living in Vegas working for Let Us Entertain You. After DePaul, the market crashed.
Mm-hmm.
And he went back to managing so that he could figure out what his next step was.
Sure.
And he was working at the Palms, I think, for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And then with Let Us again. And it came time where... I was ready to do this. And I said, I mean, I knew in my heart, nope, I couldn't do it without him.
Right.
That was really a big thing for us is that we wanted to stay connected. He was, and I knew that I could not do what he does.
Sure.
And he could not do what I did. So it was a very good pairing in that sense.
And what was, even with the Vegas as a possibility, was the concept, was Red Hen always... Like what, you've had all these cooking experiences, right? So what leads you to Red Hen?
So a bunch of things. You know, there was an absence of affordable Italian
in DC
cooking
at that time.
DC.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
I think that my experiences and my travels had brought me to places in San Francisco, places in Brooklyn, places in Chicago.
Well, Brooklyn's a great example. I mean, just a corner, great Italian place.
And in D.C. in 2011, when we signed on this, that didn't exist.
Well, actually, it's funny. Well, it's not funny, but it's fascinating because if you look back, even in the last 20 years in D.C., there were a couple, like you had Pizzeria Paradiso. You had a couple of pizza, or two Amy's.
Sure.
Yeah, but pizza was Domino's.
No.
It was.
Not 20 years ago, David.
Sure.
No, not at all. Two Amy's was already open.
No, but
Pizzeria
I'm saying
Paradiso.
Two Amy's was in one location. Pizzeria Paradiso was in one
but
location.
It's not Domino's. You're missing my point. My point is that there was no, unless you went to Galileo or,
right.
you know.
You're talking about Italian. Yeah,
like
right.
Italian. There was no place. There was no neighborhood. There weren't a lot of neighborhood Italian joints.
Right. And even
you
to
know
your
what?
Credit
there was
in terms
Pizzico
of,
in Rockville. That's where everybody went from downtown.
I mean, that place is still great.
Yeah.
Yeah,
awesome.
It's still yeah. pretty good. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, that's not for Nikki Nellis, but for the rest of us.
My wife loves that restaurant.
I don't buy into the hype. Sorry.
I've only been once, and it was very good.
It was great.
And it made me feel like I was like
in
a
Italy.
13. Well, no, it made me feel like I was a 13-year-old kid in New Jersey.
Right.
It had that very like old school feel. But, I mean, to your credit, though, like Italian food at the time, like when I was growing up in Jersey and you know, the 80s and 90s was kind
Italian
of
the, food on every
the
corner.
70s, 80s, 90s was the heyday for trattorias, right? Like
right.
red checkered tablecloth joints. There was an ugly Chianti bottle on the table. It wasn't just decoration. It was part of the decor.
I mean, growing up in Jersey myself, I'm a little bit older than you. But, I mean, we went out. Okay, I'm a little more older than him. Jesus. But Italian food. I mean, we were close to the city, so we went to Little Italy all
sure.
the time. But you could literally drive. And we were in suburbia
right.
before well, all the big development. But you could literally drive places and have Italian food, red sauce food.
The only yeah. place like that Gravy. In Washington was called AV's Ristorante on 6th and New York Avenue. And it was exactly that with the checkered tablecloth and the bad Chianti. And
sure.
And it was
that was An Yang's husband.
Oh, I know. I just saw On today.
I know you did.
All right, so we're going to take a break.
Oh, here. Yeah.
But wait, I
want
to say, if you're not in the D.C. area and you're not familiar with our Red Hen, the Red Hen we're talking about is not the one in Charlottesville.
It's not Charlottesville. It's
Lexington.
Lexington, sorry.
Yeah. Virginia.
In Lexington, Virginia, mm-hmm. where BMI is, that booted Sarah Sanders. Different
but
Red
when
Hen.
We come back, we're going to talk about what Red Hen is and the kind of
Great.
Food and style and service they're doing, and then get into All Purpose because
Great.
We also have two other restaurants.
Oi.
So much to talk about.
Woo!
So we're here with Mikey Friedman of his multiple properties here in D.C.
That liquor's getting to you, isn't it, boy?
And we're at the Line Hotel. We'll be back in just a sec.
Just wanting you here next to me. It's been a long time. Don't you agree? We could turn it all around and say to me. I wanted to stay. Come on, baby, let me hear from you. So many memories are rushing back again to me. Remember how good things used to be.
All right, we're back on Industry Night with Foodie and the Beast, David, Nikki Nellis. We're talking to Mikey Friedman, Chef Mikey Friedman, who's also a co-owner of fabulous, highly rated Red Hen here in Washington.
And it's
more like an osteria, right?
And two all purposes.
I'm not done yet.
Okay, it's
you're jumping
forever.
In.
I know.
Back off, baby.
Okay.
But would we say osteria instead of a trattoria? I think?
Yes.
I mean, in the
classic definition.
And, yeah,
yes,
and
yes,
then
sure.
two all purpose restaurants, which are, as I said before, pizzerias on steroids.
Yes.
One is down on the fabulous new waterfront
Capri.
In D.C., and the other is on 9th
in Shaw.
Street.
In Shaw, yeah.
In Shaw, but it's right near the convention center. So
right across the street.
Not in town, and you're coming into town for a convention, right
walk
down
across
all
the street.
Lots of, and lots of hotels
they'll
right
knock
around
your,
it. So.
Your pantyhose off. It's unbelievable.
Okay. So let's go back. We're going to open up a Red Hen. You guys have this concept.
Sure.
And as we were saying right before the break, you were like, I mean, there were not a lot of Red Sauce. There were not a lot of these restaurants that you and I grew up with in New Jersey, where
sure.
you just went and had really good pasta, cooked correctly. You know, I mean, listen, you don't have chicken parm at Red Hen. That's not the kind of... So you modernized your experience.
Sure.
And took it a level.
But why is it Red Hen? Where'd the name come from?
The name came from three things. One, it was a great symbol. Two, you could say it and it kind of rolled off the tongue.
Red Hen.
The Red Hen, the hen. And three, it evokes a certain level of...
Chicken. Comfy.
I would say comfort. Mm-hmm. I would say like... I hate to use the phrase farm to table,
mm-hmm.
But it somewhat evoked that. And so that's how we came up with it.
So, okay. So you come up with a concept.
Sure.
And let's explain the concept to those who haven't been there.
So the concept is the Red Hen is an Italian-inspired American restaurant rooted in mid-Atlantic ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically the spiel that we give people. We're basically in a time where sous vide and cryovac and all that kind of modernist technique was coming into play,
mm-hmm.
I built a hearth and I burned Virginia oak at a time.
To be fair, you have this tremendous, it's Grillworks, right?
Grillworks. We were the first Grillworks grill
yep.
in D.C.
And I remember
and Ben,
that.
The owner who lives here, he does a great job. And I mean, he's really exploded. Ben Eisengreth.
Eisengreth, yeah.
And his company's really exploded and they've done some really amazing things. And... when everybody was doing stuffed pasta or fresh pasta, I bought an extruder and made dry pasta.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that for me, I needed to figure out a way to be different.
You also opened in Bloomingdale.
And we opened in Bloomingdale. I mean, we were away from it, but it was a great, thriving community. It was still kind of seeing a lot of gentrification and turning. Had some bricks through our windows and stones through our windows. And people didn't really get us at first. But, you know, we just wanted to serve... really great food in a really comfortable setting that didn't have a theme to it. You know, that was the biggest thing for us is we didn't want a theme. We just wanted to cook great food and serve great booze in a great hospitality.
Yeah,
when
you
come in there, wait, well, let me just say, because okay. The first time I went there, I don't think Sam was working there yet.
No, Sam.
We went in there and
years.
I lived, I love saying this, lived in Italy for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And when I walked in between the smell of the, you know, the burning wood and mm-hmm. just the ambiance and then what I saw on everybody's plate, it literally transports you to Italy.
That's awesome. I mean, that's a huge compliment. I mean, those nostalgic
I'm hoping for
compliments.
Some freebies next time.
Those nostalgic compliments are what I strive for. And I had never been an executive chef before I opened Red Hen either. So I jumped from a sous chef de cuisine, you could call it sometimes
right.
at Proof. To this kind of running a line.
The guy in charge.
Building a kitchen, you mm-hmm. know, and you know, doing all the things that it takes to open a restaurant and then run a restaurant.
Well, how was instrumental was Mike in all that? Because you say, I want a wood-burning oven.
Michael O'Malley? I mean,
yeah.
he was the guy that it was an easy yes or it was an easy no or it was a hard yes or a hard no.
Mm-hmm.
And we stretched ourselves as much as we could, but we opened up financially stable. We never went in the red. We never have.
Did you money. Have institutional investors or private individuals?
It was seven private individuals. We didn't have any credit to have an institution back
and
us.
And I mean, I don't want to not mention Sebastian. I
sure.
mean, I know
oh, yeah,
he's
yeah.
not a part of the restaurant anymore, but Sebastian Zouton did put together the
huge,
wine program.
Huge pull
his wife
and
at
huge
Edit.
Pull in they, the neighborhood.
Right. And his wife put together, she designed... Right, Edit
she,
Lab.
Yeah, her and Brian Miller.
Yeah,
designed
they designed the space,
the
which I think really like their use of wood. You know, when you're
oh, for
seating
sure.
and the way the wood is displayed that you burn. I mean, they just created such a warm and comfy environment.
And that was the goal, and to have that central bar area where you could look into the kitchen and watch mm-hmm. the show. And having an open kitchen was big for me because. People could see in, and you could also, you had to keep it clean.
right. I have to keep it clean.
It's very important.
Yes,
Michael, clean your room.
Right. Literally,
very
yeah.
Very important.
And no, I mean, Sebastian was instrumental in the opening in terms of making sure that we had an eclectic wine list and
mm-hmm.
making sure that, you know, he was a big name in the industry. And Mike was from Vegas, and I was a nobody.
Well, that's the other thing about
You weren't exactly a nobody.
No, you were to us, but
no,
don't worry about it.
You were not a nobody. No, but
the wine list is, I mean, there are wine lists that are, and the wines are fine, but that are priced ridiculously. Everything about Red Hen is accessible.
Sure, approachable.
Yeah.
And now, you know, now the list is run by Joe Quinn.
Sure.
Who's former wine director of Proof.
Proof.
And,
I adore
you know,
him.
Before that, it was Jared Barker, who was a former worker at Proof. And he was our first employee at Red Hen and is now a GM at All Purpose and one of our closest confidants. And, you know, and I think that really speaks to also the culture that we try to build is that, you know, you want to work for us, you want to work with us. I think that's really an important phrase that we try to remember. And, you know, Red Hen ended up being really, really successful, and it still is, and it's very exciting, and it's an ever-changing restaurant. We try not to do two things the same every season. We work around the farms. We work around fishermen pulling out of the Cape May waters.
Well, I didn't. You don't really trumpet your sourcing. Like, that's not part of your persona.
But there's a reason to that.
Okay.
And the reason is that you should be sourcing well.
Right. You it's no longer a marketing tool.
It really is.
I agree.
But it used to
be,
right?
We're not serving garbage anymore.
No,
right.
No,
we're serving real food.
But no. Like, when I get, I mean, as a, you know, food media, when I get a press release that's like, we're sustainable, I'm like, yeah, you and everybody else.
Sure.
So, no, but I do think it's important to not mention it. It shouldn't just be a PS, because in Italian food especially, you know, freshness and where it's from is what it's all about.
Can I jump in for a second?
Of course.
The single most important thing in an Italian restaurant is the texture of the pasta. I mean, al dente pasta has to have some bite to it, some give back. And one of the kiss of death is when you roll that pasta on your whatever, whether it's, you know,
yeah, and it flops off.
Peachy or spaghetti or linguine. And you bite into it and it's like library paste.
Sure.
You mean
that?
Or it's under.
That's the kiss of death.
What is library?
Library paste is mushy. Wait a minute. You never ate library paste? Oh, you must have gone to a good school.
I don't know what that is.
You have to spoon that crap out of that.
Okay.
But anyways, that's really the key. If somebody's paying attention to that, that tells you a lot about what else is happening.
But I think what's interesting is that you said you're drying your own pasta. So you're making your own pasta, but you're not using it. You're not serving it fresh?
So it is a fresh dry pasta.
Right.
And it's a recipe that I developed out of pure necessity. I didn't have room to dry anywhere.
Okay.
And so we extrude the pasta. It's a vegan pasta, so it's flour and water, or flour, water, and a puree of a vegetable, or in some cases non-vegan when we utilize squid ink.
Sure.
And or ricotta in the gnocchi or in the cavatelli, which is the only fresh pastas that we make. Once the pasta is extruded, it's very hot because it goes through a brass die and it's friction.
Sure.
And so we put it in the refrigerator to chill, and then we freeze it.
Oh.
And the freezing process really sets the gluten, sets the proteins, and then we take it out, and we boil from freezing, and it only boils for about 30 seconds.
So it retains a chew, retains that al dente nature,
but it's a quick pickup for us. So we can actually, from a volume standpoint, push out quite a bit.
That's amazing.
Turn the conversation to All Purpose, because suddenly the hour goes by, and we won't
get to it.
The All Purpose on 9th Street opened when?
The All Purpose on 9th Street opened in May of 2016. Thank you, Alyssa.
I didn't know you spoke sign language.
I did.
Who's Alyssa? Is Alyssa this voice in your head?
She is.
Anyways,
she's his Siri.
Yes.
And that was an immediate hit. An immediate hit.
Well, can we talk about you know, a lot of people expect a lot of things when you open your second restaurant.
Oh, sure. It's almost more pressure. I lost years off my life from the stress of just the perception, which is not who I am as a rule, but the perception of that sophomore restaurant after the success of Red Hen, which I thought was fairly good. Mike and I were sitting at the bar at Red Hen late one night. And when we worked at Mon Ami together, we would go to Two Amy's all the time. Every Thursday, you would see Mike and I sitting there. We'd get a bottle of Vermentino. We'd order as much specials as we could. We'd share two pizzas. We'd order a bottle of Lacrima Christi. We'd get hammered. We'd walk down to Bourbon. We'd walk off the meal. We'd walk down to Bourbon in Upper Georgetown, and we'd tie one on.
You walked from Two Amy's to Bourbon? You must have sobered up pretty quickly.
Well, I mean, the Bourbon was the original Bourbon that was up in Upper Georgetown.
Yeah.
Oh, that Bourbon.
So it's just down the hill.
Right.
And
but it's
we
still
would,
a good walk.
We would, we would tie one on. And so we were talking what restaurant, like, what do we do? You know, do we do another pasta joint? Do we do something completely different? And I said to Mike, I said, Matt, wouldn't it be funny if we did pizza?
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at me and I looked at him and I went, fuck.
Right, we're going to do pizza.
Right. And so
you
that's...
You can't say that on the radio.
Yes, you can. But what's interesting is that... What's interesting about All Purpose to me, it's actually... And Red Hen. So you go to Red Hen and you have, you know, your bruschettas and, you know, fabulous entrees, meats, fish, etc., and your pasta. But when you go to Purpose, you have your pizzas and you have... That's where there's no chicken parm, but you have your... eggplant parmesan, which is like crazy good.
Sure.
And, you know, salads and your sandwiches for lunch, but you have no pasta.
No.
Which I think is interesting.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Because I
crosses
think people,
a boundary for me, though.
I think people expect both at both.
Right. Like if I ever opened a Jewish deli, I wouldn't do bagels.
I think that's a smart idea.
Yeah.
That's a Shonda.
No, it's not. Okay. So you call All Purpose the food style Jersey Italian. What does that mean to you?
Well, I mean, All Purpose is a love letter to my youth. Mm-hmm. It's a restaurant built out of nostalgia. It's a restaurant that.
But the pizzas aren't from your youth.
No, the dough is.
We didn't eat pizzas like that.
So the dough is. And there are some pizzas on there that evoke for me a nostalgic emotion.
Because they're not pizza by the slice pizza.
No.
You know what I mean? That's Jersey pizza.
Correct. I agree. But what I really set out to do was to bring back the food of New Jersey and New York of, you know, the heyday of the 60s and the 50s.
This is my cue to mention Don's Meatballs. This is where the two of you come together.
Don's Meatballs. That's right.
Let's
Don's
talk about
was
Don's.
A phenomenal
we both
restaurant.
We grew up going to Don's.
Yep. And
I know.
They had a pickle bar and a cheeseburger
oh
surprise.
Oh my God. That pickle bar was like
awesome. And the weird pictures of people eating on the hallways.
I know, it's so strange.
And a great arcade and an amazing bakery.
Amazing bakery.
And it was a place where everybody knew each other. It was so weird. And
it was in Livingston, New Jersey.
Livingston, New Jersey.
And I remember thinking
From Epis Essen.
Right. But I remember thinking when I was younger, we would go, it was one of those things, on Sunday nights, if we didn't go for Chinese food, my parents and their friends, we would get a table for 20. Do you know what I mean? And the adults would sit over there and the kids would sit over
and
here.
And they would make it happen.
And of course they would make it happen.
Because that was business for them. They were accommodating.
But what was interesting I remember my girlfriend and I, even at 14 or 15, being why isn't there a Don's on every corner? We loved
it
there.
My brother and I
were
the same way.
We just thought this was so fabulous.
Yeah.
But that part of that is you've been to Chef Vola's in Atlantic City?
No.
You know about it?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, there's that. Yeah, you know, the food there isn't that great, but it's abbondanza, boy. Uh-huh. When they drop it on the table quivers.
Right.
And there's something about, it's no different than going to a Chinese restaurant in Chinatown where families are around. And part of it is the feeling. It's
of
not
course,
just
like
the
a
food.
Dim sum Sunday in Chinatown.
Right. Exactly. And you're just packed on a table with all these
you're
people.
Shoving it
or
in
Peking Duck House on Mott Street in Chinatown. There's nothing like it. It's built its own persona.
But I'm saying that's some of the sort of the antiseptic. I mean, Nikki and I differ on what we like in restaurants and all that because she's the foodie and I'm
the beast.
Beast. But I I don't know, a little grit and grease and rubbing elbows and lots of noise and that kind of stuff. And the food's obviously important, but it's
about your experience.
Part of the meal for me is just, feeling like I'm not in somebody's contemporary showroom, but I'm
I dig that though. I mean, that's part of the reason why AP is what it is, right? I mean, you hear a lot about tables being too close together, but at a place like All Purpose, they should be.
No, right. You should bounce elbows.
They should be.
You should ask the person next to you what they're eating.
I can't tell you how many times I've watched, because again, it's an open kitchen. I'm able to walk the floor and talk to people.
Right.
How many people meet while eating at All Purpose and exchange phone numbers and be like, oh, we got to hang out or let's go have a drink down the street.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of restaurants that I want. I never wanted to open a restaurant for accolades. I wanted to open a restaurant because I wanted my family and I wanted chefs to come to the restaurant on their days off.
Right.
And so for us still to this day, there's nothing that's more meaningful when we see a chef bring their family to one of the restaurants. I think for me, we won. The accolades, they're great, but they come and go. Lists, they come and go.
Right.
I want consistency. I want hospitality. I want people to remember the feeling they have when they're in a restaurant.
You know, listen, Tom just dropped his 50 best. Mm-hmm. You're on it. It's fabulous. Mm. I mean, I applaud all the restaurants that are there. But at the end of the day, to me, and this is I'm not discrediting the importance of dining in DC and a list and people remarking on what's good and what's not. But if you're busy, if people are coming, it's a business. Isn't that what's important?
The list is there because it's a job.
Right.
Right? It's his job to do that. And it's his job to critique and to evoke emotion.
Yes.
And that's okay. He does a very good job on it.
Clicks.
As most critics do. But to be very basic about it, butts in seats enjoying themselves,
butts
in seats bringing back new butts in seats is more important to me than anything. To
and
meet
you'll
new
tell
people,
two friends and so on
to
and
meet
so
people,
on.
Exactly. To
Let's
meet
make
people
a
that have come to meet people that have come 2 years ago and have eaten the Bona, which is our pepperoni pie with kalapeno chili honey at All Purpose, and be like, it's better than I remember, is a win for
That's
me.
A compliment.
Exactly.
Right.
It's
totally,
a huge compliment.
With
and,
you.
And again, it doesn't, we strive to embark on consistency and quality every single time, every single pizza, every single salad. And that's, partly the reason why the restaurants are so successful is because of the teams that we've built within them.
So when you decided to open up down at the Navy Yards, basically across from the stadium, that stadium, you sort of, it's still All Purpose, but you changed some of the offerings. It's not a duplicate.
No. So,
The
original All Purpose was built more as a restaurant, as a way to kind of trick you into coming into a pizzeria, and all of a sudden we have a house-made salumi selection. We have this crazy seasonal antipasti selection of fritto mistos and arancini and
my favorite
supli
salad.
With cacio pepe. I mean, all these amazing things from the ideas of our chefs, Eric Rowlings and Joe Goodman.
Is he speaking Hebrew?
The all-purpose at the riverfront was meant to kind of dive deeper into the trattoria and the old-school pizzeria. So for me, in my brain, I had this place that I would go to when I was a kid in Westfield. I mean, even as an adult in Westfield, called Ferraro's. And when you walked into Ferraro's, you had the pizzeria, right? There was stone walls. It was the oldest part of the restaurant. Shitty tables in the back that you could sit in. You could tell that they got new ones every year.
Right.
And this brick oven that you'd go up and you'd order from a girl that had the Ferraro's t-shirt. And she's, "What do you need, hon?" And let's do a large with meatball and onion. All right, great. It's going to be 25 minutes. You sit whatever you want. You want a Coke? No, we're good. But then there was a hallway that you walked down.
A restaurant.
And then you'd go to the restaurant.
Right.
And the restaurant was not unlike the pizzeria menu. They had much more offerings, right?
Sure.
They had pastas.
Sure.
They had much more elaborate salads, soups, all these different things. And you went there for celebrations, right?
I'm just sitting here swallowing buckets of spit.
Right. Yeah. the great garlic bread on the table when you arrive, right? The whole floor was carpeted, which you never see anymore in restaurants.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy, right? Like the wicker baskets with the red checkered, parchment
and
paper.
The stale bread.
So for me, All Purpose is the restaurant part of Ferraro's.
Sure.
The original. But All Purpose at the riverfront is the pizzeria part of Ferraro's to me. And that's kind of how I see it.
Okay.
Not to discount what we do either.
I mean, you have...
Because the quality is still there.
The quality is still there. I mean, you have a gorgeous view there. You have an incredible outdoor patio.
Of course.
Two outdoor patios.
We have a garden patio, a front patio, and a rooftop bar.
Right. I mean, you have a lot going on
A lot
on
of
there,
outdoor space. Oh,
which
yeah.
is really fabulous. Mm-hmm.
I knew an Irish guy named Patio Bar.
Don't giggle at that. Please don't giggle at that. My God.
I'm giving him ammo.
Help me. Don't help me.
All right. I'm going to take the conversation in a whole other area because, famously, a couple of months ago, Sarah Huckabee Sanders was booted out of a restaurant in Lexington, Virginia called the Red Hen. And she was asked to leave because the staff there felt, because of all the positions that she espouses from that little lectern, that was incompatible with how they want to live their lives and be. So she was asked to leave. But you guys caught an entire flak storm. And
plus, a little bit more than that.
Tell us what that was like.
I mean, it was I would say, and Alyssa Turner is here, who is our
publicist
for the company.
She won't get. Oh, there she is.
Oh,
she's pulling that mic over. It's irresistible.
And,
come on.
So
wait, can we just say that she's also our daughter-in-law.
There you go.
We love her very much.
And she's Sam's wife.
Yes.
There's a reason I'm on this show.
It's like you got cut. Otherwise, the hell with you. Get out. But all right.
And I won't put words in her mouth. So I'd like you to talk, obviously, whenever you want. But I still remember, I think it was a Saturday.
Yes, it was.
And I woke up and I was feeding my kids. And I got this text from Alyssa. And it was a link to a story that obviously what had happened to Miss Sanders. And she had texted it to both Mike and myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it just wrote, "Hey, I think we should get ahead of this." And I looked at it and I was like, "Oh man, this is pretty funny. Like, this is kind of crazy."
How calm and collected then I said were to myself, you?
Well, I said to myself, is this going to actually have an impact? And Mike O'Malley, I think he wrote back, "I don't think this is really going to affect us."
Well, I just want to say for the record that Alyssa called me. She was away. I was away.
Yeah, she was. You were at
and
a
she was
reunion.
Like, she was home. And she was like, "What do you think?" I was like, "You better get him ready for CNN." And she knew it. She knew what was coming because there was no way that wasn't going to break bad.
Right.
Because
I mean,
people
I think
are
it took
stupid.
Me about 10 minutes and really started to, it started to sink in. And I think my immediate emotion was fear for the restaurant, fear for the employees,
right.
Fear for my own life. I mean, honestly, we live in a politically charged
well, like the guy that
right
showed
now.
Up at
right, Comet. Comet Ping Pong, right?
Like Comet, I'm going to self-investigate.
Right, Pizzagate.
Right.
Right? And I think we had it in us to get ahead of it, which Alyssa did. I think we immediately put posts out on all our social media outlets and let
but
everybody
people,
know.
But people didn't even Woo. Believe you.
Hey,
you kept
me,
saying, "Not that we're not that redhead," and they're like, "You're lying."
I think the biggest thing I learned from the 2 days that, or really 3 days, where we were really fighting this news, was illiteracy is like a huge problem in America.
Right?
I mean, it's shocking.
It's actually not illiteracy. It's
it's lack of
just,
education.
They don't care.
Right.
They're like, "I don't really care if it's you." They didn't care.
Yeah, they just wanted to.
And I just want to say, if you didn't read Alyssa's responses to every single tweet and Facebook post and Instagram. I mean, you responded to everybody.
Well, not only that, but it's clear how smart she is and why she leads Sam around by the nose.
Okay. Yes. But the way you responded, you decided to respond with humor, mm-hmm. which, I mean, you're a funny guy, Mikey. I mean, you know, you're effervescent. You have a bubbly personality.
Yeah.
And I think that Alyssa was able to capture that in response to people who were being really rude.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I could never do what Alyssa did. I mean, that was, I was laughing my ass off
mm-hmm.
watching
like,
some of these.
She's like, "Thank God."
Some of these videos that she would post. Or, I mean, there was one with Leonardo DiCaprio just like laughing hysterically when someone was. It was just. I mean, like, it was amazing. It was amazing.
So, did anybody ever show up at the restaurant and give you a bunch of crap or no?
We got egged.
That was
what was
which
the
was
best?
Which was kind of ironic that the redhead got egged.
Right, it's ironic. Yeah.
Keep the yolks. Keep the yolks.
So, what was the best one? Like, what was the most outrageous? Like, if your memory can bring it up, like, what was the most outrageous one that you heard that you were like, I don't.
You pick one, and then I'll pick one.
Yeah, each of you pick one.
I think when we said unaffiliated, and then people still misunderstood. They're like, "How can you have the same name if you're unaffiliated?"
That's mine. And it was like 80
and I was
them.
Like, I mean,
they're like, "You have the same name. You're a corporation."
Right.
And then you just, I think Alyssa posted a how do you say, GIF?
Yeah.
I never pronounce it right either.
Of Diane Keaton, which I think was in the Stepwives Club, of mm-hmm. her smacking her head
First
against
wives
the wall.
Club, yeah.
First
right.
Wives Club. Oh, literally, I lost my marbles.
Oh my God.
It was hilarious.
That is so funny.
Because it evoked this emotion of like, holy shit,
you're
you
not
people
listening.
Are so fucking crazy.
Right.
Like, that's the thing. Mm-hmm. And we learned later on that it was either like Russian troll bots or people sitting in their mom's basements kind of, you know, that had the
400
time to do this.
Guy right. in his
yeah,
you
I mean,
still
that,
had to deal with it. You had to deal with Yelp. You had to deal with people.
Yelp
like,
was really tough.
And
yeah.
honestly, but I think Yelp has learned their lesson.
I hope
so. I mean, I think you put them through the ringer, and I think a couple other restaurants have had to do the same because,
for sure.
like with
Fiola.
Fabio yep. Trabocchi and Fiola recently, mm-hmm. like, you know, people are just going to, whether they're trolls or not, we're talking about people's businesses and you
lives
know,
I mean,
and
for sure
and yeah. people's lives as well. Like what happened at Comet is
scary.
Scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And nobody wants that to happen to anybody they love or know. you know?
And it was, I think once we knew that we weren't really in harm's way, I think Alyssa really kind of took the reins and just dealt with it, I think with great humility, but with great humor too.
Great humor.
And I think that's what we evoke as a company. I mean, we take what we do very seriously, but we don't take ourselves too seriously. Mm-hmm. And I think she evoked that perfect persona within the comment.
So now the reason why we really asked you to come here today, Mikey, is it's time to give Alyssa a raise.
That's a Mike O'Malley question.
Sorry, we had the wrong Mikey. Here.
I'm going to go past that.
You've learned how to deal with the interview.
But before we wrap up, you are the chair for a huge event coming up.
I am.
So let's talk about it.
Sure. March of Dimes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really honored to be the chef chair this year of their annual
gala. Were you the
gala.
Chef chair last year?
I wasn't.
Okay.
No, I was at the event.
I remember you being there.
And, you know, something that I do a lot of charity work.
You were just at Chefs for Equality.
I
did an
was. That
amazing,
was an amazing
job.
Bet at the National
I waved
Cathedral.
You. You did not wave
I
back.
Waved at you.
You did not.
I did. You were too busy shoving food in your mouth.
That is not true.
That is true.
That you is true. Not true.
You
got a mean streak.
We'll see that. We'll see the tape.
Let's go to the videotape.
Anyway, tell us about it.
So, March of Dimes is an amazing nonprofit that really is about giving kids the best start that they can have.
Right.
And not only that, but it's about keeping moms and babies safe. And they've been doing it for over 80 years. They've really put a huge amount of time and effort into NICUs around the country. Into research and development for new tests to kind of help babies that are still in the womb or help moms find issues before things get too bad.
Mm-hmm.
And if it gets to the point where a baby doesn't have the best start that they can, then, you know, they offer hope in what is usually a very hopeless scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, you know, I have two little girls and
beautiful
a wife
girls.
At home
right.
and a beautiful wife.
Thank you. And you know, I devote pretty much all of my charity work, at least this year, to, and it will be next year, but I've really started just to devote all my time to children's charities. So No Kid Hungry, March of Dimes, Alex's Lemonade Stand, the things that kind of mean something to me, which, you know, when you start off in the game, you just do everything.
Well, because it's a little bit of both, right?
Of course.
I mean, so doing all these events, and there's in the DC market, there are tons of events.
Always.
But I think in the beginning, you kind of got to go to all of them.
Of course.
Because you're getting your name out there.
It's
a little mix.
And it's hard to say no, too,
I mean,
to like
all
doing
good charities,
charity work,
right? It's all good.
But
right.
you also, for me, as a New York Jew, you feel guilty quite a bit by saying no to doing a charity.
As a Jew from, you know... Shanghai, you feel guilty.
Exactly,
you
know? Exactly.
No, it's hard. It's hard to say no.
Right.
But you get, but the DC food community is generous to a fault.
Yes.
All the men and women
and
out there.
And it's a tight community. And
it's
a
very
job.
Tight community.
And so I was able to gather a bunch of my favorite chefs and guys that I, and girls that I look up to and it, you know, inspire me. And I aspire to cook like them. And, you know, I think all of us are always students, so we're always learning from each other. But, it's a wonderful event. I think March of Dimes always puts on a really professional event, not unlike CFV.
HRC.
I mean, I mean, always an incredible event. And for me to be able to be in the room and hear the stories firsthand of how things actually happen, right? Because sometimes you do these events and you give
really
the money, you give your time, you roll your shit in, you cook, you leave. And you get a thank you email, but you don't see the effects, right? You don't see how the money is being used or how the time is being used.
Mm-hmm.
With March of Dimes, with their annual gala, they have a sponsor family that they show a huge video about and how March of Dimes has helped them. The head doctor for the organization comes up and talks. He's a hilarious guy from Louisiana. And it really hits home, right? Like, I mean, there's not a dry eye in the house after some of those
videos.
And you're
like, this is why I do this.
And literally, it's a very aha moment every time. Even though you put a lot of work into it and you're bringing people from the restaurants into the space and taking them away from their normal jobs, there's a moment, and usually a moment at every charity, but for this one especially, and especially for me as on a personal level of having kids and having, you know, thank God, a healthy birth and to know that there's another story there. Is very powerful. And so with March of Dimes, with their annual gala, great auction items. I'll be standing on stage and auctioning off some things.
So it's October 24th?
It's October 24th at the Marriott Marquis.
Fabulous.
Wonderful, wonderful gala, silent auction items, and great food
chefs?
For a great cause.
How many?
Oh, I mean, there's five signature chefs.
Okay.
And then there's, I think, 18 or 20 different stations that you
Fabulous.
Can enjoy.
Okay.
And then there's a great video, and it's just a feel-good experience.
Excellent.
All right, I want to wrap this up by saying, if you're out there, wherever you are, if you're not in Washington, when you come to Washington, if you're in Washington, if you haven't been to Red Hen and you haven't been to All Purpose, you're missing.
Yes.
You're missing out big time.
That's very true.
Thank
you. Your tummy's missing out.
But not only that, you're a great story. You're a great success story.
Thank
and
you.
It's really fabulous to have you in studio today and hear, you know, how you got from being a kid in New Jersey and now owning
a mafioso.
Mafioso
They're still
started.
Looking for me.
Right.
I don't use my real name.
But you know, like how you wound up here. And,
sure.
And as we were talking about off air, sort of what I think will be interesting 5 or 10 years from now, like you came from Jose's kitchen, watching who comes out of your kitchen. You know, it'll
well,
be really exciting.
I hope from a humble standpoint that happens and I can teach people
Dude, it
the
better
right
be
way
Sam
to
Nellis,
do things.
I can tell you that.
Well, Sam's never leaving, so he can't go on his own.
He's not going anywhere.
I got too much dirt on him.
He's
for
at
him
home. Every time he hears his name, he preens like a pigeon.
Okay. Anyway, on that note, it is time for us to wrap up. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So we want to just say, for those of you who are listening, mark your calendars, please, for November 11th.
Yes.
That is our 10-year anniversary show for Foodie and the Beast. We are doing a live 2-hour show at... Where are we doing it?
Oh, for God's sake, at Blue Jacket.
At
down
Blue
in the
Jacket.
South
Dakota.
Cool.
At Blue Jacket. It'll
Boy,
be two
I got
to
get a new co-host.
From 11 to 2, and we have a whole incredible lineup of chefs and mixologists and winemakers that you know, and beer makers,
and
obviously.
And it's going to be amazing food and all that. If the word is that you should get a reservation
yes,
because
you should
they fill
get
up
it.
Anyways on a Sunday.
Right.
For sure.
And if you ain't
and
got
it is
a
also their 5-year anniversary.
Right.
So it's
Blue
their 5-year anniversary,
oh, wow.
Our 10-year anniversary. So we're looking forward to celebrating. Please mark your calendars.
Mazel tov.
Thank you. We're
That's
very
exciting.
Excited.
Is that Italian?
Yeah.
We want to thank Mikey Freeman for joining us today and Alyssa Turner, who reluctantly came to the mic.
The reluctant Alyssa
and,
Turner.
You did great.
But she did terrific, of course. And thank you for listening today. This is David and Nikki Nellis, Industry Night with Foodie and the Beast. We're live at the Line Hotel. We'll see you next week.
Good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.